2 Samuel chapter 5, if you would find your way over there, we're going to look, or continue to look at this book of the Bible. I don't know about you, but I'm really enjoying the study of David and his life. And, you know, as we go through this, I find a lot of practical lessons, just real straightforward lessons that we can learn from and apply to our life. And this morning, I think we're going to find many more. As we look at this chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 1 says, "Then came all the tribes of Israel to David unto Hebron and spake, saying, Behold, we are thy bone and thy flesh. Also in time past, when Saul was king over us, thou wast he that leddest out and broughtest in Israel. And the Lord said to thee, Thou shalt feed my people Israel. Thou shalt be a captain over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king to Hebron, and King David made a league with them in Hebron before the Lord." It says, "And they anointed David king over Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. In Hebron he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem he reigned 30 and 3 years over all Israel and Judah." So we're going to start there this morning and look at our chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 5. We're going to be looking at this entire chapter, and basically I've broken it down into two sections. The title of the chapter is David Anointed King Over All Israel. The first section, verses 1 through 16, we're going to look at David's position as king, as far as him ascending to the throne. And then afterwards, some of the things that occurred immediately after, as soon as he took, control over the entire nation. And then finally, at the end, we're going to take a quick look at David's prominence over the Philistines. You know, that was one of the reasons that he was called to the throne, was to be victorious over the Philistines, the nation that had troubled the Israelites. And we're going to see that God did bless him immediately. I mean, right away he was blessed in that area. So we're going to get started this morning, verses 1 through 5. We've read that there. We're going to see how David, or look a little bit at David ascending to the throne. The Bible tells us at the very beginning that all the tribes of Israel went to Hebron and spake unto David, and they were there to make him their king. Now, in 1 Chronicles really provides a good commentary running along with this book. 1 Chronicles, if you're taking notes, chapter 12, verses 23 through 40, gives us the list, more of a detailed list of those that went to David. And I'm not going to read the entire list. Let me just turn over there and I'll read the first part there, 1 Chronicles chapter 12 and verse 23. It says there, "And these are the numbers of the bands that were ready armed to the war, and came to David to Hebron to turn the kingdom of Saul to him according to the word of the Lord." And then it goes on to give the numbers of those that were there. What I want to draw to your attention first off is, notice these were men of war. We're not talking about families here. We're talking about these were their soldiers, those that had been fighting. These are the men that went to Hebron to make David their king. Now, Hebron was there in the middle, and all these men traveled there to Hebron. Now, as far as the list, you'll notice, if you read it on your own, you'll find Judah. It says Judah had 6,800 men, Simeon 7,100, and the list goes on and on. I'll give you a few thoughts on the list. Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin, had the lowest amount, it appears. They had 3,000 men. Now, keep in mind, this was Saul's tribe. Perhaps, I guess you say they were still influenced a little bit, or had a hard time following David as he began to lead. Being his family and his tribe, maybe there was a little bit of animosity there. But they had the lowest. Maybe not. Maybe they just not many decided to show up. Also, draw your attention to when it talks about Issachar. Now, I'm referring to 1 Chronicles 12. When it talks about Issachar, it mentions 200 men. But it also points out that those were the heads of the tribes. It didn't give us the exact amount of Issachar's, their attendance there. It just gave us the heads of the tribes, which were 200, which means it was a lot more as far as men that were there. Basically, we can add up, when you look at this, over 350,000 men went there to Hebron to make David their king. Now, that's a large contingent of fighting men, especially in that day, to arrive there to make David their king. It must have been quite a scene. It must have been an incredible scene. Could you imagine David? I imagine he was thrilled when they began to show up, these men. And for some, it may have even been a reunion. What I mean by that, many of David's men probably knew some of these, and the time of reunion must have been great. Now, the reason why they went was to make David king. We find that here in verse 1 of 2 Samuel 5. It says there, we'll get back to 2 Samuel now. It says, then came all the tribes of Israel to David unto Hebron, saying, behold, we are thy bone and thy flesh. Also in time past, when Saul was king over us, thou wast he that leddest out and broughtest in Israel. And the Lord said to thee, thou shalt feed my people Israel. Thou shalt be captain over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king to Hebron. And then it tells us that they made a league together, and they made David their king. The nation at this point was looking for peace. They had been fighting 7 years of civil war, pretty much. I believe now they were ready to unite with David. Abner was out of the way. He was the instigator of a lot of it. He was gone. Ishbosheth had taken the throne, but he wasn't their rightful king, and he was gone now. You know, the people were humbled and broken, is what happened. They were defeated, and they looked to God. You know, the Lord may allow hardships to bring about his will, and he does. The Lord allows hardships in our personal life sometimes. So we look to him, we trust in him, we consider. You know, sometimes when everything's going well, not always, but sometimes everything's going well, we get so caught up in our life, and we may forget to look to God on a daily basis. But when hardships come, it reminds us of our need and our need to seek God. Also, nations have often looked to God after difficulties or after hardships. Now, that's not saying we pray for hardships, but sometimes God may allow those to bring people to him or bring about his will. That's what happened here, I think. He allowed Israel to be broken. Then they come looking for David, their king, to make him their king. Now, as far as David, I want to give you some thoughts on David here. David provides us an excellent example of waiting on the Lord. He does. Waiting is one of the hardest, most difficult things to do. Whether it's waiting at the doctor, you know, you get in there and you wait and wait and wait. Waiting for someone to come visit. Waiting is difficult sometimes. You know, when we wait on the Lord, it can be difficult as well. But I'm going to give you some thoughts here I hope will help you as far as waiting on the Lord. And these are from David, some practical thoughts. First, David refused to seize the throne and force the nation to follow. He may have been tempted to, but he refused to do that. David didn't just go to the throne and say, you're going to follow me because I'm king. He allowed God to work. And that's the first thought I'll give to you. You know, when you think about it, he exercised patience and self-restraint. You know, when you have to wait on God, you have to be patient. And sometimes you got to exercise self-restraint. You may want to go do something, but you have to wait on God to work. Also, David was blessed for his patience. You know, it's always a blessing to wait on God and then be given what God has for you. And that's what happened with David. Here's another thought. David was satisfied with allowing God to work it out for him. That's contentment. You know, that's another one that's difficult. But you know, when we wait on God, we're content. Or we have to be content with our situation at the moment, knowing God will either work or change that in his time. So David was satisfied with God working and allowing God to work. And that's another lesson for us. You know, finally, you know, David settled at Hebron and took up homes. What I mean by that is we find that he, in the last chapter we saw, he settled there. They built homes, they lived, and they just waited for God. You know, there's no record of David instigating a battle or attacking or trying to claim land or a throne. Abner, the only battle we find is Abner attacking him and coming into the land, and David, and or actually Joab, led a defense. So when you think about it, even after Ishbosheth died, David didn't go and try to claim things. He waited for God. Finally, here's my last thought on it. During this entire time, his conduct was good. Evidently, he was correct as far as he didn't go out and try to scheme or deceive. Now, I'm not saying he was perfect. He made mistakes, of course. But as far as trying to bring about God's will in David's time, that didn't happen. David allowed God to work and just waited. Now, the Bible here tells us that these men gave three reasons why they wanted David to be their king. The first one, if you'll notice, it says there in at the end of verse 1, it says, behold, we are thy bone and thy flesh. That's the first reason. Basically, David was one of them. That goes back to Deuteronomy as far as looking for kings or when the nation was to have a king. The king of a nation, of Israel was to be an Israelite. And so they knew David was one of them, and that was the first reason. The second reason they give at first two, it says, also in time past, when Saul was king over us, thou wast he, it says, that leddest out and brought us in Israel. In other words, David's experience is the second reason why they wanted him to be king. They knew he was the one that was leading the military conflicts when he was with King Saul. You go back to 1 Samuel, and David won many battles against the Philistines and others. Before Saul chased him away from the palace, David was very successful to the point where the people You know, they praised, what they say, Saul is slain of thousands, but David is 10,000s. And they praised David more than Saul because of David's success. And that was remembered as well. Finally, and this is, we find at the end of verse 2, it says there, "And the Lord said to thee, Thou shalt feed my people Israel, thou shalt be captain over Israel." The third reason is because of the Lord's word. Now, that probably should have been first, I think. You know, if God has said something and settled it, it should have been done. They should have just went and said, "David, you're king because God has said you're king." But you know, we get a little bit of, I guess you say, their stubbornness here. They've been fighting for 7 years. You know, if they would have done that immediately, things would have probably worked out a little bit better from the beginning. But the nation of Israel had been stubborn. But they finally gave in. How many can relate to that? You know, it's easy to become stubborn in our ways and then finally give in and look back and say, you know, I should have done that several years ago or months back or weeks back. I should have just given it to God and let him handle it. So we can all become that way. Basically, they recognized David is what happened here. And I'm not going to go into any more of this too much in this section because we're going to move on. But they recognized David as their king. The Bible says they made a league together. I imagine it was probably based on the scriptures. You know, we find in the Bible in Deuteronomy chapter 17. If you're taking notes, it's Deuteronomy 17, verses 14 and 20. In the law there, we're given the responsibilities of a king, basically. And I believe this league was probably made along those lines. It probably covered the conduct of David and also the conduct of the people. But the elders, it says here, agreed. And they decided to make David their king or their captain. And it mentions there in verse at the end of verse 2, "Thou shalt feed my people Israel, shall be a captain over Israel." Those were his responsibilities. Feeding the people was to take care of them, to provide for them. And to be captain was basically to defend them, protect them, whether in battle or in defense. He was to do both of those. And so David had some great responsibilities, and the nation was going to let him be the king. And that's a blessing. And we find, you know what you find over the next several years? David blessed. I mean, he really was. God blessed him as the king. Now, the Bible tells us that David reigned for 40 years. Actually, I do want to mention real quick, you know, in 1 Chronicles, it tells us that they had a, let me find it here if I have my reference. 1 Chronicles chapter 12, we've already referenced it, but verses 23 through 40, the Bible tells us that they had a ceremony for David, and a great celebration of 3 days took place after David was anointed king. You know, one commentator made this comment, I thought it was good. Israel has yet to have another day like that, when you think about it. David, that was almost the pinnacle for Israel. Solomon became king, but there was no, I mean, they had celebrations and stuff. But then the kingdom divided upon his death. And then, of course, they went into captivity. Then the Messiah came, Jesus Christ. They rejected him. They've been in troubles and hardships ever since. You know, I don't think they're going to have another day like this until they accept their Messiah. And I don't have time to go into all the, you know, I guess you say comparisons between David as far as his reign and then, you know, Jesus Christ as far as his future reign. But they're there. You see him. And the nation of Israel will again someday, I believe, rejoice as a nation with a king. But we find here they rejoiced and the Lord was going to bless. The Bible tells us David reigned for 40 years. This includes his reign over Judah and his reign over Israel. So total combined, he reigned for 40 years. Also tells us that David was 30 years old when he ascended to the throne and he reigned as king. What's interesting is 30 years old is the same age that the Levites would begin their work. In Numbers chapter 4, we find that. And it's also the same age that Jesus Christ began his earthly ministry at the age of 30. You know, I guess the Lord has a tie-in there with the age of 30. Anyway, David was prepared. Here's what I'm going to give you some practical thoughts this morning, and then we're going to move on to the rest of this, the next section here. But I think David was prepared to be king in those 30 years. You know, it wasn't like those 30 years were just worthless because he wasn't leading and he wasn't a king. I believe God prepared him to be a king in those 30 years. And I'm going to give you some thoughts. First, he was called in those 30 years. When he was a young man, he was called. And he lived in the palace, and he served there with King Saul. During that time, I imagine he learned what royalty was as far as how to live in a palace, how to conduct yourself, how to lead, and everything else. And then we also know during that time, he led the army, went out, was experienced in battle. Gained not only leadership experience and those things. And by the way, those practical experiences are needed to lead a king. You know, in our world today, there are a lot of practical experiences that a pastor may need or a business person may need. You see, God understands that. God knows we need those to live. And I believe God will provide those if necessary, if we need them. And he allowed David to learn all this. Also, when you think about this, when David was chased from the palace, could you imagine being chased from the place you knew you were going to be king of? Chased from the palace, living on the run. And the Bible tells us he lived in caves. He lived on the, basically off the field is what he did. I imagine during that time is when he learned to trust in the Lord. And you can be sure that would come in handy later as king, when everyone's coming to him telling him this and that, and he's got to make decisions as far as going into battle. He had to trust in the Lord then. And I imagine that time when he learned to trust in the Lord on his own was a benefit later in life. You know, experiences. Now, experiences should not, they shouldn't determine our worship to God. You know, that's one of the things that's happening, I think, in modern Christianity. Everyone's basically turning into psychology, saying, well, you got to draw from your experiences in this. No, we learn from our experiences. And our experiences can prepare us, and God may allow those experiences in our life to prepare us, and we can learn from. But we actually live in the moment, I believe. We live for God right now. And we can allow those experiences to be a blessing. And that's what happened with David. Anyway, David did not receive what he wanted immediately. Have you ever had that? You want something, and you pray about it, and you don't get it. But when you finally receive it, if God allows you to have it, it's a time to rejoice. You're just thankful because you wanted it and God blessed you with it. David didn't receive what he wanted. I guarantee he wanted that throne. I mean, he was tempted to kill Saul several times, but he refused to do so, waited. And I imagine for David, when he took that throne, it was just a wonderful day. We know several of the Psalms indicate that day. And he praised God, loved God, and was just thankful for being able to be on the throne. So David reigned there in Judah, it says, for 7 years, and then he took the reign of Israel, all of Israel, for the next 33 years. Now let's look at verses 6 and 10. Here we find basically David's first decision as king, his first action as far as military action as king. It says there in verse 6, and the king and his men went to Jerusalem unto the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, which spake unto David, saying, except thou take away the blind and the lame, thou shalt not come in hither, thinking David cannot come in hither. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, the same, it says, is the city of David. So David immediately makes a decision, and that decision was to go and take Jerusalem. Now some might think, well, David's just being mean and cruel, going and taking the city from these people. First, here's some thoughts here. First, I think David was reclaiming what already belonged to the nation, but what the nation failed to take care of to begin with. And I'll explain that here in a minute. Secondly, he was going to provide a strong capital, a central capital for the nation to not only political and government, but also religiously, where they could worship the Lord and have a temple in the future. Now, David selected Jerusalem, basically for the capital. You notice he didn't select his hometown. Jerusalem was not his tribe or his hometown. And basically, it became the capital or center of the nation. Now, I'm sure that took a lot of restraint from David. You know, Saul, in 1 Samuel, Saul chose his hometown as the capital, Gibeah. You know, a lot of leaders would have done the same, but David, I think, was thinking of the people. You know, he was a leader of the people, not a leader trying to find his own, I guess you say, fame. Anyway, Jerusalem. He goes into Jerusalem. Jerusalem was also called Zion. It's an ancient, established city. It goes all the way back to the time of Abraham. It's believed Melchizedek was probably the king of it refers to him as king of Zion. So it's believed, or Salem, excuse me, it's believed that he was the king, and the city goes as far back as that, maybe even further. But anyway, the city at the time of David's reign, of this chapter here, was inhabited by Jebusites. We don't have the time to get into this too much, but I'm going to give you some references. If you want to write these down, I'm not going to turn there because of time, but I'm going to give you these references and so you, for your future study. But during Joshua's time, when the people came into the land, Jerusalem was a renowned city. It was known. People knew about it, and it was a renowned city. The tribe of Judah failed. They were to pretty much take the land, as God had promised, but they failed and could not remove the Jebusites from the land. And we find that in Joshua chapter 15. And so what happened is the Jebusites remained, and they stayed there in that city and pretty much took over Jerusalem because the tribe of Judah failed to remove them. And then later, even though, I guess, say the city belonged to the tribe of Benjamin, they failed as well to do anything about it and just let the people stay. Now, that's where we find I guess, David now. We have the Jebusites. They have stayed there for years, thousands of years. The people of Israel commanded to move them out, just didn't do it. They just neglected it or were unable to do it. David, on the other hand, you think about this. He's going to make a point in his first move as king. Not only is he going to capture a city, but he's going to remove a group of people that God had already ordered to leave, and he's going to take over that city. Now, we have a combined army now, Judah and Israel. Now, think about this. You have all those veterans, those tough soldiers from David's group now combined with this new group, a larger group that had come down from Israel and united with David. And I imagine these men were excited to follow David now, their new king, and to follow him wherever he would lead. And so they go up to Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is always referred to as being up. It is on a hill, and they head up to Jerusalem, even though at this time it wasn't near the size that it was during the time of Christ. They head up there, and the Bible tells us that the Jebusites waited, probably locked themselves behind the walls, and it says they mocked David, and I believe that's what it is. We find them talking about the lame. It says there, except thou take away the blind lame, thou shalt not come in hither, thinking, it says there, that David could come. It says, David cannot come in hither. Most believe, and I believe they're probably mocking is what this is. They're laughing at David, saying, you know, the blind and lame, you can't even defeat them. You can't even get them out of the way. And it says they're thinking that David could not come in. In other words, they believed they were safe inside that city and that they could not be overcome. Well, what's interesting is we find here, it says there, verse 8, and David said on that day, whosoever getteth up to the gutter, smiteth the Jebusites and the lame and the blind that are hated of David's soul, he shall be chief and captain. Wherefore they said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house. So David dwelt in the fort, called it the city of David. David built around about him from Milo and inward. And David went on and grew great, and the Lord of hosts was with him. We're not given all the details of the battle, but apparently, talks about a gutter there. That word refers to a culvert or ditch of some kind. Many believe this is a tactic that David's referring to. Maybe there was a weakness there. You know, the Babylonians, or the city of Babylon later was taken in a similar weakness where the water would come in. Maybe that's what this is referring to. David found a weakness and he challenged these men. He said, whoever can get up there and take this city will be the chief and the captain. Now remember that the army has been united. So you have Joab who's been leading David's men. Then I imagine you have all these other leaders who've been leading, you know, the people of Israel. And all of a sudden, David says, here's the challenge. You want this position, a leader of the entire army, then get up there and take it. Bible tells us that Joab was the one who got up there. Now, Joab was ambitious. And Joab, say what you want, he earned his position is what he did. He got up there. The Bible tells us that he must have led his group or his men. And there he earned the title captain of the army. Later, we find that Joab also led in the reconstruction of the city and the building of the city. He also led in that. So he was a man who ambition, and we're not through with him. We're going to run into him in the future a little bit later. But anyway, David established his residence here in Jerusalem. This would become the city, capital city. I think we all know that Jerusalem is still in the headline news today. You know, it's still a place that people covet, place that people want. It's going to be that way until the Lord returns. The Bible has told us that. It shouldn't surprise us. It's going to continue. It's changed hands several times. I don't think it's ever been really completely controlled since David and them. But what we find is that it's still, a hotbed of trouble and so forth, even in our time. Well, David moved his capital over there. And we're going to move on because of time's sake. I'm going to move on to the next section here, verses 11 through 16. Before I do want to mention that God blessed him. Notice at the end of verse 10, it says, David grew great, and the Lord of God hosts was with him. So God did bless him as far as his life probably, and also his leadership and as king. But verses 11 through 16, it says, and Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers, it says, to David, and cedar trees, carpenters, and masons, and they built David a house. And David perceived that the Lord had established him king over Israel, and that he had exalted his kingdom for the people Israel's sake. Real quick, David had a house built. This is verses 11 through 16. We're going to see that David enlarged his home, first with a house. Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers to David, workers, materials, to build David a house. Now, I personally believe it was probably an alliance of some kind. David now, king of Israel, controlled the ways, the trading routes now that went through down through to Africa, also going through to the Middle East. It's prime piece of land to control. And I think Hiram here, this man, king of Tyre, instead of fighting David, decided just to make an alliance. It's worked together, which probably worked out well for both nations. And we find that he sent all this material and workers to help build David a house. And also notice that David accepted this. David was fine with that. And we don't find him being reprimanded for this. You know, God can bless us from, I guess, say, people of the world. You know, God is not only God of believers, but he's God of this entire world. And he can work in hearts of those that may be against him or may not even care to provide blessings for his children. And that's what I think we find here. You know, keep that in mind when you're at work and things don't seem to be going your way. You know, God may be working behind the scenes to bring something about that'll be a blessing to you. So just trust that God is able to do that. Anyway, this worldly king, we know nothing else really or much about him. But anyway, he was used to be a blessing to David and the people of Israel. David understood the blessing. And notice what David said in verse 12. This here, someday I may preach a message on this, but notice it says, perceive that the Lord had established him king over Israel. First, he perceived. In other words, he observed or recognized that God was the one who blessed him. You know, this morning it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking that we've earned something or we've done something. You know what? Let's remember that everything we have is a blessing from God. Our home, our house, our family, our job, everything is a blessing from God, whether he's allowed it. He's allowed us to have the abilities to do what we have. Two things he mentioned. He mentioned that God had established him. He knew God was the one who put him on the throne, established him as king, encouraged the people to follow. Secondly, he talks about being exalted. You see, David realized or recognized he didn't do it himself. God was the one who provided that power. We find a humble king, and that's good that he was humble, and I believe that's why he was blessed early. Now, if you're just taking notes, Psalm chapter 30. Psalm chapter 30 is believed, well, it was written at this time, at the dedication of his house, when his house was built. So if you ever want to read that in correlation with the chapter, Psalm 30 would go right here as far as giving praise for the building of his house. Anyway, David also enlarged his family. So here he is having understanding that God has blessed him, and then he goes and does something foolish. Now for him, he may not have thought it was foolish, but it was. Notice what happens in verse 13. It says, and David took him more concubines and wives out of Jerusalem after he was come from Hebron, and there were yet sons and daughters born to David. It says, and these be the names of those that were born unto him, and it gives a list of names. But real quick, I just want to mention a few thoughts. We talked about this a few weeks ago, so I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail on the sin of polygamy because we already covered that, but I will give you a few more thoughts on it. First, the Bible says David added more women to his house. He took concubines. You know, kings back then had what they would call harems, where they would have concubines and women, and some considered them secondary wives is what they called them. Now, that's just disgraceful is what it is, but that's just what they did. Also, it says David took wives. Now, that's women for his home, for his house. He took more wives. He's neither excused nor justified in this. The Bible is not excusing him here, and the Bible is not justifying his actions. It's just telling us what he did is what we find. You know, David probably followed the custom of the day. You know, we know in history, we know that the ancient Eastern customs, I'm not saying every king did this, but a majority of them did, took many wives. And they believed that it was good for a king to have a large family. That way, if something happened, then that family could protect itself and maintain the throne was a lot of the thought there. And so they believed it was good to have a large family. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a large family, but it must be done in accordance with the Word of God, not outside or any other way. Well, these kings, for the most part, your ancient Eastern kings, were immoral. They didn't know God, didn't love God. So for them to do that, I guess you could say it's expected. You know, we shouldn't be surprised when sinful people and wicked people live sinfully and do wicked deeds. It really shouldn't surprise us. David, on the other hand, knew better. He had the Scriptures. He must have known about Deuteronomy, where it says that a king shouldn't add wives or multiply wives unto him. He knew better. It was a mistake. It was. And like I mentioned a few weeks ago, it was a blemish on his testimony. And don't think he got away with it. It did catch up with him. Like all sin, he did was accountable for it. David's home life was often just in shambles. You almost feel for him later. You know it was his mistake, but you know to see that what happened to his family and how there was just so much bitterness and fighting within it, it's just sad. But he brought it upon himself is what he did. And it gives a list of his sons by the wives, and I'm not going to go through that list. We it's probably not extensive. What I mean by that, it doesn't give us all of his sons, probably by other concubines. And so we just have a list there. Anyway, let's move on to our next section there. It says in verse 17, it says, but when the Philistines heard of that, it says there, they heard that they had anointed David king over Israel. All the Philistines came up to seek David, and David heard of it and went down to the hold. The Philistines also came and spread themselves in the valley of Rephaim. And David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up to the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into mine hand? And the Lord said unto David, go up, for I will doubtless deliver the Philistines into thine hand. And David came to Baal Perazim, and David smote them there, and said, the Lord hath broken forth upon mine enemies before me as the breach of waters. Therefore he called the name of that place Baal Perazim. So, real quick, we're going to have two battles here. And the Bible doesn't give us all the details. Now, keep in mind, we have to remember why we have the Bible. The Bible is not to provide a detailed history. If God would have wanted to have done that, he could have. He could have provided every single detail in history and could have written a history book. The Bible is not a history book. Now, it's filled with history, and the history in there is accurate. But the Bible was written, I believe, the Old Testament was to prepare the world for the Messiah, to prepare, especially the Jews, to prepare them for the coming Messiah, for Jesus Christ. And everything in here is for a purpose. So we're told here that David had these two victories. We're not given all the details, but we're given enough to know a little bit of what took place and a little bit to learn from. First, I want to remind you, according to 2 Samuel chapter 3, let me return to there. 2 Samuel 3 verse 18 says, now then do it, for the Lord hath spoken of David, saying, by the hand of my servant David, he says, I will save my people Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. And then he mentions other enemies as well. David was specifically called to deliver the Israelites from the Philistines. That was part of, I think, a specific plan that God had for him. You know, there was a lot of other things that took place, but God raised him up to deliver Israel out of the hand of their enemies. And so we find immediately that God began to bless David in this manner. The Philistines were the aggressors, by the way. Notice that. David took the city. They were building, fortifying it. And then all of a sudden the Philistines hear that David had been anointed king, and here they come. The Bible says that they were the aggressors. Now, they were also the aggressors when they defeated King Saul. I imagine at this point that the Philistines were pretty arrogant. I imagine they thought, we'll do the same thing to David that we did to Saul. Let's go down there. Let's get him. Perhaps they were looking to attack before David could really establish himself. Now, the Philistines, it says there, heard David had taken the throne. And not only taken the throne, that meant the nation was united. There was no more turmoil. There's no more civil war. Now, imagine the Philistines didn't mind when they were fighting each other. You know, Israel and Judah going at it, let them beat each other up. You know, I think the devil doesn't mind when churches fight within. And if churches having a battle within, the devil probably just step aside and just let it go. Church that's fighting within is not going to do anything that's effective for the Lord anyway. So the devil probably just removes himself and goes somewhere else. That's why it's best to remove any quarrels, any problems within a church and serve the Lord. Anyway, now that there was no civil war, the Philistines are concerned. Israel's united, and they got themselves a king. And not just a king, but David. Now, you go back to 1 Samuel, you know what you'll find? David was legendary for his exploits against the Philistines, his battles against, it goes all the way back to Goliath. His first battle was against the Philistine giant, the Philistine, hero, and Bible says he, ended that quickly, and the Philistines fled and ran, and the Israelites were blessed. From that point on, he had many other victories against the Philistines, and he was really legendary against them. So they knew of David. It was no surprise, who he was. They knew who he was. Also, David had, this was another mistake he made earlier, he had went into the Philistine country, and he lived there for a time. Remember in 1 Samuel, he became friends with Achish there, one of the Philistine kings or leaders, and to the point where he almost went into battle against Israel. He didn't. God protected and blessed. But some of these people may have had some ties with David, and they may have known David personally, and they probably saw David as just a traitor or someone who was, deceiving or whatever. But the Bible says that they brought themselves down to this valley. Now, the valley of Rephaim, just outside Jerusalem. So for this army to march down and assemble themselves in the valley, basically, I believe it was an attack on the city. They were coming down to attack Jerusalem, and they assembled themselves in the valley. They must have had a good group of people there to do that. And they went looking for David. Now, it tells us, and we're going to see David's reaction real quick. It says there in verse 17 that when David saw them coming up, it says, and David heard of it and went down to the hold. Now, that hold refers to a fort or a stronghold. Some believe it refers to Mount Zion, which may be true, or just another stronghold. Well, if it was Mount Zion, then it was up on the hill. Now, today, modern-day Jerusalem, Zion and Jerusalem are pretty much together. You know how small towns grow? Years back, you know, you have maybe a small city and a suburb, but pretty soon they just kind of grow together and it just becomes one. That's what happened. Mount Zion was almost separate during David's life from the city of Jerusalem. It was right there on that same ridge. But Zion was able to overlook that entire, that field, that valley. And perhaps that's where David went, and he watched them assemble themselves and pretty much get ready for battle as he's looking down. Well, knowing David, David was brave, David was courageous. David, it seemed like, was always ready to fight. But instead of rushing into battle, you know what he did? He looked to God. Now this is, I tell you, this here is really David as a king at his finest. There's a problem in front of him, and instead of tackling it himself, he looks to God and inquires of the Lord. We find that verse 19. And he inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up to the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into mine hand?" So he basically has two important questions for the Lord. First, he says, "Shall I go up to the Philistines?" Now, this concerns direction. David wanted to know what God wanted him to do. Should he go up? They're out there. Basically, David's saying, should I attack them? Should I provide a defense? Should I maybe send a white flag over and maybe see if we can strike peace and have a treaty? He's asking God what he wants him to do. You know, this is, when you think about it, it's practical. We may not be going into battle, but on an everyday basis, you probably have decisions you need to make. And choices. You know, it's best to seek God. Ask Him. You know, Lord, what door do you want me to go through? Do you want me to go this direction? Or what do you have for me? And just get into a good relationship with God where you take your problems to the Lord. Anyway, David looked for what God wanted him to do. Also, notice he didn't have a plan and say, "God, here's my plan. Will you please approve it?" He asked God for direction, and that's what he's looking for. And then he asked God for a promise. He said, "Will thou deliver them into mine hand?" This concerned the result. He wanted to know if he'd be successful, if the Lord would allow him to succeed. And the Lord gave a positive answer concerning both questions. Notice it says there in verse 19, the Lord said unto David, "Go up, for I will doubtless deliver the Philistines into thine hand." So David was directed to go into battle. As far as David himself, he was obedient immediately. Once he got the direction, he went. You know, if the Lord has given us some direction in the Bible, there's no need to wait or delay. I've heard people before say, "Well, you know, I'm just waiting for the Lord to let me know when I need to be a witness." Well, He's already let you know that. It's found in the Bible. You read it, you'll find that we're already to be witnesses. There's already been a commission given to take the gospel to the lost. Now it's just up to us to obey that and to go. Anyway, David, as far as his requests, he asked specifically, not generally. I encourage you in your prayer life to ask specifically. Have specific requests. When you talk to the Lord, keep in mind, you're going to God and talking to Him. You know, we talk to everybody else. We're specific in the way we talk. So talk to the Lord specifically. Also, David used reason. You know, today, be careful of this. This is going around. This is the spiritualism. And if you're not aware of what's happening in a lot of churches, this is what's taking place. They're telling people to empty your mind, clear your mind of thoughts, and then just allow the Spirit to come and lead. Well, you do that, you probably get a spirit to lead, but I'm going to tell you, it's probably not going to be the Holy Spirit. The devil or one of his evil spirits will probably come and lead and direct. The Bible never tells us to do that. David didn't do that. David didn't clear his mind and say, "Well, I'll just see what'll happen." David used reason. He was thinking this entire time. He's out there looking at these men and he's asking God, "What do you want me to do?" And I imagine in his mind, he's already began to get some ideas. And he's reasoning and he's thinking it through. And then the Lord gave him direction, is what we find. So David looked for direction, not approval. God blessed him. They went into the fight and they won. Now, we're going to look real quick and I'm going to close with this. The Bible tells us there in verse 22, and the Philistines came up yet again, spread themselves in the valley of Ephraim. When David inquired of the Lord, he said, "Thou shalt not go up, but fetch a compass behind them, come upon them over against the mulberry trees. Let it be when thou hearest the sound of a going in the tops of the mulberry trees, that then thou shalt bestir thyself, for then shall the Lord go out before thee to smite the host of the Philistines." David did so as the Lord had commanded him, smote the Philistines from Geba until thou come to Gezer. Real quick, in closing this morning, the Philistines came back. You know, at the end of the last battle, the Bible says that they left their images on the field. David and his men picked up all those idols and burned them. I imagine the Philistines were a little bit bruised and upset and angry. They evidently had more forces or enough to make another attack, and they come back. They return. You know what David did? He did the same thing. He inquired of the Lord. You know, it may have been tempting for David to say, I'll just go do the same thing. You know, keep that in mind. The Lord may choose to bless in a different manner next time, or the Lord may choose to direct differently as we go along. And that's what happened. He asked the Lord. He said, you know, what would you have me to do? And this time the Lord said, don't attack in the front. Go around. Fetch a compass. Now that phrase, fetch a compass, we don't use that today, but that's talking about encircling, to go around. And he says, go around to the backside of the army. And he said, when you get there, of course, the Lord would provide a sign. Now notice, David didn't ask for a sign. God was going to give it to him. He said, I'm going to provide you a sign, and then you'll know when to attack. David followed. Obedient. God blessed. You know, as we close this chapter, that's what I want to draw your attention to in closing. We're going to have a word of prayer. In closing this morning, what we find is an obedient king is what we find. I tell you, you read this chapter. You just reading it, you say, man, Israel has been blessed. They have went to this man who was waiting on the Lord. The Lord allowed them to choose him as their king. Then this man takes the throne, immediately begins to not only unite the nation, but establish a strong nation with the capital. And then this king, instead of going and doing what he wants, you know, today it'd be nice to have leaders that would care about the people, wouldn't it? Now I believe we have some. I'm not saying all of our leaders are personal, you know, selfish, but a lot of them, that characterizes them. They're just out for themselves or their own agenda. David was not like that. He cared for the people. He cared for God, and he wanted to lead correctly as far as leadership of the nation. And so he went to God, and when the problem came up, instead of saying, well, I'm going to go and do what I think is best, he looked to God. God blessed. You know, the nation at this point, I think really we find you can't get any higher than this. God has blessed them. And God would continue to bless as long as David would continue to walk with him. We're going to see things would change eventually, but next week we're going to see another wonderful chapter. Now there were some mistakes David made, but he would learn from his mistakes as he